It's time for JT the Brick.
It's a new day. It's a new chapter. It's a new era. It's a new mindset.
Jacoby Myers in motion. O'Connell takes the snap, throws it out to him. He's going to throw to the end zone. Touchdown, Devontae.
I love hearing that sound.
You know, I thought at the end of the year it was nice. Allegiant Stadium started to turn into a home field advantage. You could hear the roar of the crowd.
Well, to me, it's not just unconventional. It's the right way, and it's our way.
Vegas is the global hub of the Raider Nation. Now it's got to act that way every home game.
Raider Nation, as I always say, you know, you show up and we'll show out.
JT the Brick.
It's a real thing. It's a tangible thing. You get in the building and you feel it.
It's a war to track down Kansas City. I've always been a big fan of running the football.
Hand up to Zamir. Cuts to the right side. First down, 35. First 40. Down the 50. Near side, 40. 35, 30. And Zamir White might have just salted away a Raiders win.
I'm always looking for opportunities to compete, man. And this is a great one here.
And now,
Raider Nation unite!
Here's JT the Brick.
Out of the gate, JT with you as we are ready to roll. Good to have everybody here. We're on YouTube. Man, I like my YouTube page, man. I had nothing to do with it. My son launched it less than 2 months ago. We got a bunch of people in here. They come in here before the show, like Cisco from the Black Hole. Raider Paul is there. Joey Yarborough says 9 to 10 wins, JT, as I'm still going over schedule release part deux. We do two parts from time to time. This summer, we'll be doing the greatest Raider games of all time. Top 10 games. Some games will take us 2 days. We'll start it off, and then we'll finish it the second day. So today is part two of the NFL schedule release. And what we want to do is we want to hear from you, and we want to know what's going on. What do you think now that you've had an opportunity to look at this schedule? You've had, you know, 48 hours to look at it, and now you got to have an opinion on it. And as I said in the chat here as we started off the show, is there a game that you looked at after a day or so and you said, you know, I think we can win that game? Can we win this game? I mean, you got to say you can win every game. You're not going to sit there and say, we can't win this game. The Raiders beat Kansas City in Kansas City last year. Okay, so you can beat anybody. You beat Kansas City at Arrowhead. So you can win any game on the schedule. Some will be more difficult. At Baltimore, at Miami, Kansas City on the road, Cincinnati on the road, whatever it is. But here's what I thought after day two. Day two, after this, I thought about the two games that are at home that are really important. Cleveland, week four, and Pittsburgh, week six. So I want to spend time on that in the monologue brought to you by PTs. They fuel the monologue 5 to 7, midnight to 2. You know they win all the awards because they get the best happy hour in town. You know, we've touched on the fact that they're gouging you now in Vegas at some strip establishments. And, you know, you go out and you're like, really? Really? A $23 for a Jack and Coke? Really? You go to PTs, you can have price drinks twice, 5 to 7, midnight to 2. That's pretty cool. They want your business and you can watch sports there. You can eat, you can game, and have a good time there, thanks to PTs. So the two games that I brought up is going to be the topic that I want you to get in on at 702-365-9200. The Raiders have to win five home games to make the playoffs. I've done the math. I've done this longer than most people listening. I've studied the schedule release from professional GMs, players. I've talked about it. That's a little bit of the experience I have. A little bit of the experience I have in doing this long is schedule. That's one of my strengths. I can tell you, like, road games, weather, travel, come off the bye week at home or on the road. I think I'm pretty good at that. Well, after doing all the math and secretly counting the wins and losses, because I'm not going to do that here, but secretly counting them, I've come to the conclusion that the Raiders have to beat either Cleveland or Pittsburgh at home. I'm giving the Raiders Denver, Carolina, and the Chargers at home. Charger game's the last game of the year, man. I don't want to wait that long. That home game, that's why we got to beat L.A. in L.A. We got to put one on the books. We got to walk into the locker room and put one on the books and say we got one. We're 1-0, just like last year with Denver. 1-0 on the road in Denver. Got to happen again this year. But the five home games the Raiders have to win are the Chargers, Denver, Carolina, then Cleveland or Pittsburgh. If you win them both, you got five. And then you could look at Jacksonville, right? You can look at Jacksonville. You can Kansas City at home. I don't believe there is a path for the Raiders to make the playoffs unless they win five home games out of eight. I don't think that's asking much. The Raiders are pretty good at Allegiant Stadium. They've won some big games there. So that's where I'm going. Now the road. There's 9 games on the road. You kind of got to go 4-5 or 5-4 on the road, but you better take care of home field, or I don't care what you do on the road. You're not making the playoffs. So we're going to see a lot of things happen here in the coming months. Camp battles, who's going to start a quarterback, who's going to be the edge rusher opposite Max, Malcolm Kuntz, where are you going to put Tyree Wilson, what are you going to do, what are you going to do? We're going to do all that. But as I went through the schedule multiple times, if you think the Raiders are good enough to win, you know, 10 games, you better find one. You better find 5 home games. We'll get back to that here in a little bit. So dial up on that, and I'll get you on at 702-365-9200. One of the great honors of my career is I'm the MC for the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame. It's one of the best Hall of Fames I've ever been to. It really is. They pay tribute to the great athletes, the individuals who have helped grow Vegas and Southern Nevada, and it's all tied to charity. And we get exclusive rights to interview the inductees before anybody. My first guest is getting inducted coming up, C.J. Watson, former star point guard at Bishop Gorman High School, legend, before playing at the University of Tennessee, legend, and then 10 years in the NBA, and played professionally in Europe, and he's kind enough to join us. C.J., first off, congratulations on this great honor for you and your family. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk to you because I remember your career going back to Gorman and then at college and in the NBA. Let's begin with the early part of your life. Who had the biggest influence with you as a young boy getting you involved with athletics?
Probably just my parents, you know, just playing in the front yard with my dad and my brother. Coming from a family full of athletes. My mom and dad played pretty much every sport. All my aunts and uncles played all different kind of sports. So it was just kind of, you know, just something to do just to stay out of trouble and just to, you know, just to stay active, you know, just stay, like I said, just out of trouble.
Yeah, staying out of trouble is a big part of any kid's life, and that is great. So you decide you're going to go to Gorman, and you lead the Gales to some unbelievable moments, winning 2 titles in 2000 and 2002, but you're also named the 2001 and 2002 Gatorade Nevada Player of the Year. What was that path like? What did you learn at Gorman in the classroom and on the court?
I came into high school with a lot of hype, so I just wanted to go out and prove that I could play on the high school level and, you know, and be effective. I didn't want to I don't think there was a term bust back then, but I didn't want to be a bust. But I just wanted to come out and just continue to improve. And my parents wanted to put me in a good atmosphere in Gorman, having the best education and being involved in being around the best sports atmosphere also. So I just tried to make the most out of it. And also I just wanted to, you know, get to college because my parents always told me that I should go to college. You know, that's a good experience for me. So I just wanted to try and help them and get myself there for free and not having them to pay for it.
Yeah, what I find fascinating, C.J. Watson is an inductee into the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame. Academics are important at Gorman, and academics are important as you go to the University of Tennessee. What was the recruiting process like? I'm sure several coaches were looking at you as you played in high school from different colleges. How did you end up choosing Tennessee?
So my dream school was to go to UCLA. The coach there got fired, so that kind of halted my aspirations of going there. So I just kind of opened up my recruiting. So it was a couple of schools besides Tennessee. And my family is also from Tennessee, so it kind of made it a little easier if I ever needed anything or got homesick. My grandma and my aunts and uncles were only like 2.5 hours away, so it was kind of relieving to have them there and for their support and them always being in my games and stuff like that.
What was your defining moment in college, the most memorable game, the game that you're most proud of?
I would say just getting to the tournament. My senior year, we were the 2 seed in the tournament. We got upset, which kind of sucked, but just getting to the tournament. I'd never been to the tournament before that, but it's definitely fun playing that tournament, you know, and having that kind of experience.
So your path to the NBA D League, now the G League, before you got to the NBA, was that concerning at the time? I mean, did you think that you had a path early to the NBA, or how much work, the combine, what were you hearing in your ears before you decided to go pro?
I actually kind of decided I was going to leave my junior year until my coach got fired. Mm-hmm. And so my new coach, Bruce Pearl, convinced me to stay, and I had a better senior season. So it's actually kind of a blessing in disguise. But just going to the draft, it was just going into I heard things like I would get drafted second round, then maybe undrafted. So I just kind of wanted to go in there and just trying to prove myself. I had some pretty good workouts. So So I just kind of went in there, you know, just trying to get drafted and see what happened. Obviously, went undrafted, but I definitely think that was kind of just kind of helped me just play with more chip on my shoulder and helped me be more dedicated and really define myself as a player.
CJ Watson is our guest, one of the inductees into the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame. So your first game with the Warriors, you would also play for Chicago, Brooklyn, Indiana, Orlando during your career. You played in 600 games, regular season games, and 48 playoff games. So your NBA path and your dreams, when you look back at your NBA career, what are some of your fondest moments?
Just the teammates and the friendships I made, the bonds, just being able to travel across the world, going to China and Taiwan, a lot of places I never thought I would probably go. Like I said, basketball has taken me all those places, and like I said, just all the friendships and relationships I made throughout time.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I always ask athletes this, mostly football players, but I'll ask you this two-part question and take your time. Who's the greatest teammate you ever played with, and who is the greatest player you ever played against?
The greatest player is easy because Kobe. That's
okay. For the greatest, all right, the greatest that's easy.
It's debatable. Everyone has a different opinion. The greatest teammate, I would say, would probably be Joakim Noah. He was just a great teammate from afar, and then also playing against him in college. And when I got to be his teammate, kind of just realized how everyone always liked him and enjoyed playing with him.
CJ watching as we wrap it up. So you founded the Quiet Storm Foundation. You know, what a blessing for you to foster learning opportunities that include social skills development, health and fitness activities to help youth grow. How'd you get involved with that, and what type of passion is that in your life, charity work, giving back?
My parents had us, me and my brother, giving back at a small, early age. That's kind of been their forte, and I always loved doing it. So even when church, we'd always go feed the homeless or go to nursing homes and sing with the elderly and stuff like that. So it's always been a passion. And I always like had a vision, like if I ever, you know, was successful enough, I wanted to be able to give back to my community. And definitely, you know, growing up here in the inner city, I love giving back to kids who may not have the resources, but also, you know, want to have aspirations of maybe being a professional athlete or a doctor or lawyer. So we just try to make those things feasible for them and just kind of create joy and smile on their faces.
Well, CJ, I'll tell you this. For many, many years, I sat out in the crowd. Now I get to MC the event, and I got to know a lot of the men and women behind the scenes. This is a really big honor. This is a really solid Sports Hall of Fame nationally, and they do such a great job. I know you're aware of this. This is going to be a big night for you and your family. You got a lot of people coming out to support you that night?
Yeah, just mostly family. Like you said, this is definitely a huge event. I never honestly thought of being into the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame, with just all the people that are in it, and all the work behind the scenes and the stuff that they do, and Jim and Dell do a great job. And like I said, it's just definitely a big honor to be in with all the other people.
Well, I'm honored to be a part of it and to get an opportunity to be a part of the introduction of you that night and have you on the radio today. All the best. I'll see you in a couple of weeks. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You got it. CJ Watson. Nice to talk to him. 10 years in the NBA and a Bishop Gorman legend, Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame. We'll have three other inductees coming up here over the next couple of weeks. And this is one thing I'm doing also coming up next hour, Coaches versus Cancer, another group that I'm working for Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Tim Miles will join us. He's the head coach over at San Jose State Basketball. He's a character. He's a lot of fun. A lot of fun. I'm looking forward to this interview, looking forward to talking to him. So we're back on the schedule. So this is it. And look, it's not that I'm not going to talk about the schedule next week. I will be. But today's the day. I got raw emotion from you. Now I got raw emotion. And yesterday that monologue did pretty well for us on social media. And I wasn't happy about the two starting road games against the Harbaugh brothers. By the way, what the hell is that all about? Oh, someone sat around in a boardroom all off season and said, we're not going to give the Raiders a home game in the first 2 weeks. We're not going to do that. And by the way, let's do something weird and quirky and give them both Harbaugh brothers on the road. Really? No one like went stood up in the boardroom and said, that's kind of weird. You're going to have them on the road and then both of them are against the Harbaughs week one and two? Like, who came up with that? I want to know. I want the name of the person in that meeting that said that was cool. Just bringing it up. I mean, no one else is going to bring it up. They don't even talk about the Raiders on SportsCenter anymore. You ever turn on NFL Network? They don't even mention the Raiders. They don't even mention them. They don't even know who's on the team. So I want to know that. I also want to know why we only got one primetime game against a non-rival in Atlanta. I want to know why New Orleans was parked on the back end after Christmas. That's it. I'm good with the bye week. I'm thrilled that we don't have any cold weather games. No cold weather games as far as I can tell. None. No cold weather games. That's good. We're a dome team that plays out west. It's 93 degrees today in Vegas, okay? We are not a cold weather team. We're not. We're tough. Antonio Pierce is tough, but we're not a cold weather team. That won't be an issue. We're not playing Miami in extreme humidity early. I like that. So overall, I think the schedule is unique. Is it difficult? It's supposed to be difficult. Why is the Raiders' schedule more difficult than most? It's because they play the Chiefs twice. When you have a weighted average of your schedule, if you play in a division that has Kansas City twice and you play in the NFC North and you don't play Kansas City at all, your schedule is going to be tougher with two Kansas City games. Then you throw in for the Raiders a Baltimore road game and a Cincinnati road game, Cleveland at home, a playoff team. You start adding up the playoff teams. It's going to be interesting to see. Start fast. No matter what, whoever we play, start fast is what's going to be. Fans aren't upset about Carolina being the home opener. You know, it's like the opening night, Bobby, of the Rolling Stones. They opened up in Houston, right? They could have opened up in Madison Square Garden. They could have opened up in Seattle. They opened up in Houston. Everyone's excited. Are you going to see the best show the first night of the tour? Normally not. But they were pretty excited to have the first show of the Stones in Houston. Our first home game is Carolina. I don't know what to tell you about that. We better win that game. All right, we better win that game. Got to win that game. All right, so the big story today, and I'm going to talk about it more next hour, but Scottie Scheffler getting arrested on the way to the golf course. This is a developing story. We do not have all the details. I'm not going to go too deep on all this until we get more and more details on all this. Now the story is coming out. Here's what happened. There was a fatality death. Someone got killed in a crosswalk. And what happened was Scottie Scheffler was on his way. So you can imagine, wherever you live, if there are sirens and cones and police in the middle of the road telling you to stop, you stop. I don't know what Scheffler did, but clearly a police officer is saying that he was dragged by Scottie Scheffler's car. So I'm not going to assume anything. People today, my buddies were like, well, Scheffler probably got nervous and hit the gas. Or maybe he went to hit the brake, he hit the gas. We don't know what happened. But what's happening now is Scottie Scheffler went out and played another great round of golf, and he barely made it to the tee box in time. Barely. They let him out of jail. They took a mugshot. I always preface this as a sports talk host throughout my career. When I can see a police report and I see a mugshot, it means you bleeping went to jail. Not like you almost went to jail and the cop let you go home because you were DUI. Or you were in a barroom brawl and your buddy got you out of there. When I see a police report and a mugshot, I know you went to jail. So I woke up to this morning and my phone was blowing up. And I started reading about it. And then Jeff Darlington, who's an NFL reporter, who's double dipping with golf like Marty Smith at ESPN. He ends up doing college football. They have him work for ESPN with the golf. So here's Jeff Darlington, who happened to be there with his cell phone to get the video.
Entering Valhalla Golf Club this morning, we witnessed a car pull around us that was Scottie Scheffler was in the car. To be very clear about the details here, Scottie Scheffler has been detained by police officers, placed in the back of a police vehicle in handcuffs after he tried to pull around what he believed to be security. Ended up being police officers. They told him to stop. When he didn't stop, the police officer attached himself to the vehicle. Scheffler then traveled another 10 yards before stopping the car. The police officer then grabbed at his arm, attempting to pull him out of the car before Scheffler eventually opened the door, at which point the police officer pulled Scheffler out of the car, pushed him up against the car, and immediately placed him in handcuffs. Scheffler was then walked over to the police car, placed in the back in handcuffs, very stunned about what was happening, looked toward me as he was in those handcuffs and said, "Please help me." He very clearly did not know what was happening in the situation. It moved very quickly, very rapidly, very aggressively. He was detained in that police vehicle for approximately 20 minutes. The police officers at that point did not understand that Scottie Scheffler was a golfer in the tournament, nor, of course, that he is the number one player in the world.
Wow. How about Jeff Darlington being there with that? Talk about a guy who has good information. I mean, that's the type of information that you could use in court. He basically told you what happened from his perspective. So I got to do a sports radio show today, so I got to at least speculate. I have to. But I've always said, if you've been listening to me for 20 minutes or 25 years, I always side on the side of the police. I do. And then when there's bad cops and cops do bad things, which happen, those cops should be held to the full extent of the law. Okay? I'm not shying away from that. And this could get racial only on the internet. Only on the internet. This wasn't a racial issue, but there are a lot of minorities who are going to say, well, if that was a black 19-year-old kid pulled over trying to go around an accident and took off with his car, what would have happened to that kid? I don't know. I don't know. I'm not going to comment on something I don't know. But Scottie Scheffler is a man of faith. He's a golfer. He's an elite golfer who was trying to get to a golf tournament where he was going to work. Why didn't he stop? There might have been confusion. It was dark. It's raining. It's 5-something in the morning. He was getting there early for a tee time, 5 hours early. So I'm not making excuses for him. I want to know what he did. But it comes down to something I was talking about with Bobby during the show. Whenever there are flashing lights and police officers and they're in the middle of the road, just stop. Listen to their orders. There was a fatality car accident and they were working in the rain and someone was killed. And Scottie Scheffler, all reports indicate that he tried to get around it. All right, maybe he thought he was one left turn away, and if he just got around that cop on the right, he could go in. It doesn't work that way. Was it a misunderstanding? Oh, you want to get the internet popping? Say it's a misunderstanding in 2004, a police pullover with a white guy. Go out there and say it was a misunderstanding. The internet's going to break. So there's not much I can do. He's on the golf course. He's insane. Do you know what he scored today, Bobby? He's still out there. I can't believe this. The guy's 6-under today. The guy was in jail. He had an orange jumpsuit on. He got to the golf course. He had no time to warm up, just minutes. He's 5-under par today going into his last hole. He's 9-under. Let me say this again. I don't know if he's innocent or guilty. My gut tells me these charges are going to be dropped. My gut tells me if Valhalla ever wants to have a golf tournament the rest of their life with the PGA Tour, I'm sensing there's a lot of entitlement and the charges will probably get knocked down to something. If there's a police officer listening, if you want to tell me maybe, what could this be? But when you're a moving vehicle, you're a weapon. If a police officer is trying to stop you and you're dragging the police officer because you're not listening to his command, you're going to go to jail. And you're going to go to court. And you're going to have to settle for something less. And that's what I think will happen here. What's weird about this is two things. Last thing, we'll get to your calls. There's no debate he's the greatest guy in the world. Like everybody says, there's not a person on God's green earth that would say, man, Scottie Scheffler's a hothead. Or, you know, he was drinking. Because you wake up in the morning, you see this. The first thing I thought of, DUI. Right, first thing, but not Scottie Scheffler. He's a man of faith. He's God squad. He puts his religion first. He's a good guy. But he definitely was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and it sounds like he did not follow commands. I'm a follow command guy. That's just, you know, I teach my kids the same thing. God forbid you make a mistake in a vehicle, pull over, get safe, get to the side of the road, be safe, put your hands on the steering wheel, and listen to authority. Other people are going to have a different reaction to that comment and say, hey, it doesn't work that way. I'm generalizing. I'm broadcasting. I'm not narrowcasting. I'm broadcasting. But this story, if he wins this golf tournament, forget about it. This will be the craziest story maybe we've ever covered in sports. And there's been a lot of wild ones. You know, Aaron Hernandez was playing as a murderer when no one knew. Right? That's crazy. That's extreme. You got other extreme stories, OJ. You got this, that, and sports. When it comes to Tiger Woods, Tiger Woods got arrested in Jupiter, Florida. He thought he was in California. He was so whacked out. Tiger Woods, the greatest golfer of all time. There's a meme going there with Tiger being arrested and Scottie Scheffler being arrested. They're mugshot side by side. And the internet's going crazy today. So I don't think anybody should ever get special treatment, ever. Ever. If he needs to be arrested, if he's already been arrested, he's out. If he did something really wrong, he better tell the truth. That's the other big thing. He better tell the truth, Bobby. He better tell the truth because there's cameras everywhere. These cops got cameras. Jeff Darlington had a camera. Other people had cameras. He better be telling the truth, and we'll see what happens there. Let's get some reaction to this. Are we a sports show or a Raider podcast every day? The biggest story in sports. Let's get some people, some golf fans. I got my golf clubs in the car. Raise your hand and beep your horn if you got your clubs in the car. You should be able to get involved in a conversation like this. 702-365-9200. Isaac in Fresno starting us off tonight. Raider country today. What's up, Isaac?
Hey, how's it going, JT?
Good.
Yeah, very interesting to hear about Scheffler getting arrested
mm-hmm.
On the day he's going to go in and play. I think he got released at 8:40.
Mm-hmm.
He's teeing off at 10:08, man. That is just, it's crazy. Feel really bad for the guy and the whole situation, especially there was a fatality there. It's going to be very interesting. I just found out about it this morning, so it'll be interesting to see what turns of that. But moving on to the Raiders here. I think you're right, man. I mean, this year, instead of, I guess it kind of flip-flops whether you have 9 or 8 home games. So this year we have 8, and I think we definitely need 5 wins because we have, the way I'm looking at the schedule, we got to start out hot, and that's typically not our style, but we got to start out 4-2, 5-1 if we can because we hit a really tough stretch from week 7 to 11. Where we could possibly lose all 4 of those games.
Seven to 11. Eddie Pascal said when we were on live during that. That's the gauntlet. 7-11, including the bye week, is the toughest part of the schedule. And you nailed it, Isaac. Got to start fast. Got to put 3 wins in the bank. I think 3-3 out of the gate would be really good. 4-2 would be bleeping incredible. I think if the Raiders start off 4-2, they're definitely going to make the playoffs because I've dove through the schedule. But, you know, the one thing you don't want to do is go 1-2, which would be losing in L.A. and then losing to Baltimore and then having to beat Carolina. That's the worst-case scenario. The best-case scenario, I think, is, you know, obviously winning them both, but I think splitting the first 2 games and then beating Carolina, go 2-1, I think every Raider fan would take that to the bank today. You would, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think traveling back east to Baltimore to get a win there, I mean, I think that's just a huge ask. It's really tough, especially with Lamar, and he's going to be out for something to prove, and they're going to be coming off of a game with the Chiefs, which they could lose. You know, they're going to be out for blood, so that's going to be a really tough game. I think every team we play this year, with the exception of the Broncos, has their plan at QB. They have a plan in place. We're the exception. Everybody's kind of riding off AOC, but I think they're sleeping on him, man. The guy's got a live arm. I think Gardner Minshew can move around a little bit more in the pocket. I think the experts are all kind of picking Gardner to take that position over at some point. I'm still going to ride with AOC. We'll see. I think he's got a lot of potential, but really excited to see Bowers and the 12 personnel to see what that kind of bring to our offense. Hopefully that could free up Devontae Adams a little bit. But we need to be aggressive on first down. We can't be 80-90% run on first down because with 12 personnel, if they know you're going to run, it's just going to make your options less and less.
Yeah.
We want those defensive coordinators to be guessing, like, okay, are these guys 50-50 on first down they're going to run? And then I think we'll be good. But,
okay.
Need to be tough on short yardage.
Yeah, okay. We're not doing a preview. I appreciate it, man. Thank you. We're not doing a preview of the season. I appreciate what you said, and it was about the schedule today. But you're right. One thing about 12 personnel. 12 personnel classic 2 tight ends has never seen Brock Bowers. Now, you'd say Travis Kelce is better than Brock Bowers. Of course, Travis Kelce is a Hall of Famer. He's one of the greatest of all time. Plays 12 personnel. Rob Gronkowski, one of the greatest 12 personnel receivers at tight end ever. Right, I mentioned the year that both Dave Casper and Raymond Chester were in, that was more, that was heavy 12 personnel. That was 12 personnel where tight ends blocked. But both of those guys were Pro Bowlers that year. The X factor for the Raiders being really good this year, is the return of Devontae. Not that Devontae left last year, but Devontae went through a lot. He started with Jimmy Garoppolo. He had to play with Brian Hoyer. Josh McDaniels got fired, went to Aiden O'Connell. Think of what Devontae had to put up with last year. Now some stability for Devontae, and Devontae is going to have a lot to do with who gets the quarterback position. It's going to be who can get the ball to Devontae. Who can get the ball to Devontae Adams? It's not hard, everybody. We're running two tight ends with a kid named Brock Bowers who can get a shuttle pass. He could get a, you know, a handoff. Right? You can give him anything you want. You can throw to him behind the line of scrimmage. You can throw him a slant. You can throw him an 8-yard down and out. You can throw him a little in route over the middle where he's great at. Everything changes now for Luke Getsy. Luke Getsy woke up the day of the draft with no idea he'd have Brock Bowers. Now he does. He's got Devontae, who he worked with in Green Bay. Put the offense together. This is not rocket science. This is 12 personnel with Devontae Adams, Jacoby Myers, and Trey Tucker. I repeat, 12 personnel with a double team on Devontae, Jacoby Myers on the field, and Trey Tucker running Cliff Branch bombs. I can put a concept together on how this could work on the radio. On the radio, I can put this concept together. Send Devontae out on a quick 7, 8, 12-yard route. Have Trey Tucker run the bomb. And then have Michael Mayer maybe block and have Bowers run an in route when no one's over the middle of the field and he goes for 30. And then run to the line of scrimmage and run it again. Because here's the big thing, and Vinny talked about it brilliantly on the show, brilliantly. When you're running this type of offense, you don't want the defense to sub and match up. Can this be the year, Bobby, we play hurry up? And JT doesn't whine and moan like a 14-year-old girl on the post-game show. Why did we let the clock run down? Why did the clock... I'll get there. I got to finish this point. Are we going to let the clock run down to 3 seconds on the clock so the defense can sub in their players and sub up against Brock Bowers? Or are we going to have a little giddy-up? Are we going to play faster? Are we going to go for the throat? Are we going to step on their neck and attack the end zone? We had a former head coach in Josh McDaniels who was a wizard, genius, 6-time Super Bowl champ, and the offense never flourished because it was very vanilla. It wasn't explosive. There were a lot of issues to it. It just couldn't get going. Okay, new head coach, new offensive coordinator, new skill set, Brock Bowers, two new offensive linemen. It's go time. None of this, let's get in the lab and figure it out. We should have this thing figured out by tonight. Run this thing efficiently. Run the plays that you've worked on in Henderson's. Please, I know there's a t-shirt maker out there. Make a t-shirt. JT the Brick says, run the plays that you ran in Henderson. Set it up in practice and run it till it works. Oh, and Costa Mesa too. That's the monologue brought to you by Resorts World. Resorts World, Doghouse Saloon, concerts, dining, 3 hotels, unbelievable gaming. One of the best-looking casino floors you've ever seen in your life. Juniors. Oh, they got the great deli Juniors. The best vanilla shake I've ever had. I told my buddy Frankie, go in there and get a shake. He got the chocolate shake. He said, how is the greatest shake I ever had? Not at Shake Shack, not at Carvel. It was at Juniors inside Resorts World.
Yeah, I think, anytime you have a young guy like that, that can come in and play as well as he did, without getting to know him yet well enough, I think it just speaks volumes of the type of guy that he is. Like, without even knowing him or talking to him about anything yet, I could tell you right now that guy's got to be someone that prepares his butt off and is a great teammate. I mean, for the guys to rally around him the way that I saw from the outside looking in, and for him to go to perform the way that he did in the end of that season, that just speaks volumes. So I'm excited to get to know him, excited to work with him for sure.
All right, Scottie Scheffler is speaking live right now after his round. He shot 66 after being arrested this morning, taking a mug shot in jail and barely getting back to the golf course. He shot 66. He's 9 under, 2 back. I mean, the guy is just going to tear up this golf course. If he ends up winning after getting arrested and having these charges against him, I mean, I don't know. I can't compare it to anything. I can't. I there's nothing that we all as sports fans can compare it to. What? I don't know. I mean, there's been NBA players and football players who have been arrested and got out of jail and played in a football game. Did anybody remember how they did? I remember Eugene Robinson missed the Super Bowl. He got arrested on Biscayne Boulevard, pretty good player at the time, and got arrested and didn't play. But if you look back at sports, there's been plenty of guys who've gotten a DUI after a night out after a game. You know, you go out after the game, you go to the club, you get a DUI, you get booked, you get bailed out, and then you play. That's happened a lot, but nothing like this. A guy going into a golf major, trying to get around an accident and getting arrested, and the cops saying that the car dragged him 10 to 15 feet, and then he goes out and shoots 66. I mean, only golfers can understand this. And if you're not a golfer, you don't understand what it means to shoot 66 under duress. Like, you don't play better golf after you get arrested. You don't go out there and go, oh, my God, I'm going to play my best round. I just got arrested, and I got all this adrenaline going, and I got a brand-new baby at home. This is a brand-new father of 2 weeks. His baby, Bobby, is 2 weeks old, and the baby's dad has already been arrested. I mean, for the guy that you would say would be the last guy you'd ever think would ever get arrested. So as he's speaking at the PGA, it says Scottie Scheffler has the American flag underneath it, arrested this morning at 6:01 a.m. Eastern. Wow. I mean, one thing about the dead zone in sports, the offseason in sports, there's always something that happens that no one has an idea. This one's way out there. Jeff in Modesto, California on the Raiders mobile app. Hello.
Hey, JT, can you hear me?
I got you good. Thanks, Jeff.
All right. They got my name wrong. It's actually Jason.
Okay, Jason.
Hey, you asked for law enforcement, but I've just retired 23 years, police officer. Kind of give you some input to what I think. First of all, I did see the video where he drove around. It's obvious that the traffic is adhering to the traffic control of the officer. Big yellow vest. There's a car parked. All the lights going. Looks like a Christmas tree. Got road flares and cones out, and it's obviously blocked off, no passing through traffic. All of a sudden, you see the SUV pop out, go around, go right towards, and then go around the police officer through the cones and the, whatchamacallit, the flares. In the 23 years of law enforcement, I probably no less than 50 fatalities that I responded to.
Wow.
And we had, there was one particular where the guy did it, went around all of our cone patterns and whatnot, and he was actually DUI. In this circumstance, I kind of feel like there's a sense of entitlement that he felt that I'm so-and-so, and I need to go around to get to this side of the golf course because I'm special. Now, I'm not judging Scheffler at all. I don't know him. I've only seen him speak a couple times. I've watched him play. He's a dang good golfer.
Sure.
But, you know, there comes a point in time where you got to kind of swallow your pride because there's a reason why those police officers are out there. It's not because they want to, but they have to.
Well, hold on, Jeff. Let me stop you for a second. What about the confusion that people said about the people, the cops that were there with the yellow ponchos on and then the security that was there with the yellow poncho? And I'll follow up with this question as your law enforcement. If he's at the golf course and he is a golfer, not the best in the world, just a golfer, if he had that conversation with the police officer there saying, I'm going to the golf tournament, I'm a player, can I get through? What would the police officer typically say? No, hold your ground, there's a fatality. What would you do?
Yeah, but you have to explain it to him.
Yeah.
As a police officer, you have to explain, look, I'm sorry, this might be an inconvenience, but we have a fatality on this roadway, and this roadway is blocked pending the investigation. We don't want to be out there in the rain.
No, of course.
Sweating. But we have to because we have to protect the integrity of that investigation. It's a crime scene.
Yes.
And a fatality crime scene, most I've ever been to, they could take up miles.
Sure. So what do you think is going to happen here, Jeff? What do you think his plea will be? I know you're not there. You're not Louisville police. But with your background, knowing that he has high-priced attorneys, he's going to have his storyline here. What will the final charges be? What do you think they'll throw out? And what do you think they'll hold that'll be knocked down to a misdemeanor and a fine, if that's the case?
Based on my experience, most likely he'll probably get failure to adhere to I don't know what their laws are in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Here in California, where I'm at, usually something like that. They'd knock it down, depending on what their driving record is, what the criminal history record is. He's going to be clean and squeaky. We all know that.
Yes,
he's a good guy.
He is a good guy.
And so he'll probably, and he doesn't need, he's going to have high price attorneys and things like that. But really, in all honesty, it's going to come down to what the situation was at the time and what the belief is going to be.
Yes.
How is 12 people that can't get off of jury duty going to rule in a situation like that?
Yeah, I think he's just going to. Yeah, I appreciate the call. Jeff, thanks for adding to this. I got to go, but I thank you for this. Appreciate that. Very good call. That's what I asked for. That's what we got. We got law enforcement to call in on what's going to happen here. I mean, I don't claim to know anything about traffic violations, but this is a traffic violation. But did it get physical? Jeff Darlington, 4 minutes ago, Scheffler opened his press conference with a comment about the tragic and fatal accident that occurred earlier. My sympathies go out to the family of Mr. Mills. I can't imagine what they're going through right now. My situation will be handled. More from Scotty Scheffler. I feel like my head is still spinning. I can't really explain what happened. I did spend some time stretching in the jail cell. Okay, that's interesting. Why do we need to know that? I guess someone probably asked him, how'd you have time to get ready? And maybe he said I was stretching in the jail cell. He better handle this correctly, man. He's got endorsements. He's our greatest golfer in America. He's our number one golfer in America. He's got to handle his business here. He's got to tell the truth. And I think he will tell the truth. I think he made probably a really bad mistake not listening to authority. Happens every day, man. Every day. And people have the right to question authority. But if there's a traffic accident and a fatality, stay in your car and listen to demands and commands. Be patient. And hopefully you can get to where you're going. That wasn't the case for Scotty Scheffler today. He wanted to go golf. He went to jail.
They're the worst offense I've seen for grown folks. Is it like
for grown
folks? Like it's like they just get a ball to one guy and go one on one. They win a lot of games because they got talent. But there's it's like what are they doing? It's like, here, Jason, you get to the top of the key, go one on one, shoot a step back three. Jalen, you go back there, you make a move. Everybody just stands around. It's frustrating. I don't. Maybe some things will change when Porzingis come back, but the way they play offense right now, they can't win a championship like that.
All right, that is Charles Barkley on the Celtics. Bobby, who's our executive producer, is a Celtic fan. I'm a Knick fan, so I love the fact that we have a chance to go toe to toe. When was the last time, Bobby, you and I had the Knicks and the Celtics? Well, I know because the Knicks are never in the Eastern Conference Finals. Yeah, going back to Yankees, Red Sox, or not before, so I'm going to look forward to that tonight. Going to Pearl Jam tomorrow night. Man, I've been knocking out the concerts, man. Dinner next to Mick Jagger, that's in my new podcast, JT and Looney. If you didn't see that, Johnny Katz reported it. I had dinner next to Mick Jagger. Bobby, I can't believe how many friends asked me if I took a picture. No. This is Piero's. You don't take your phone out and go, hey, Mick, turn around and do that. But I told the story in detail on the podcast coming up here, a lot on that. Scotty Scheffler just spoke to the media about his scenario and his situation, and he was pretty open about going to jail, for moving around and what's going on. He could only say so much there. But we'll see what happens with Scotty Scheffler. If he wins this thing, they'll talk about this for 200 years. If he wins a major championship, the year he won the Masters, the year he's having, and he wins and is holding up the PGA championship after being arrested, I don't know what you would compare that to in the history of golf. going back to Jack Nicklaus, Bobby Jones, St. Andrews. I don't know what you can compare them to. And that's what's interesting about sports. Not great about sports. What's interesting is things happen that none of us ever think of. We can never imagine certain things happening, and that's what happened here earlier today. All right, so next hour, Tim Miles is supposed to call us. Coaches versus Cancer, we had Lon Kruger on earlier this week. Tim Miles is the head coach of San Jose State basketball, formerly of Nebraska. Good guy, funny guy. I hang out with him at this event, play golf with him. Really cool guy. He's going to join us. I'm going to go through the Raiders schedule one more time, and I want to take a look at a couple other teams. Well, the teams I want to look at, the Jets got the most favorable primetime games, but primetime games are tough, and the Jets won the popularity contest in a big way. The Steelers got the toughest eight-game stretch in the history of the NFL the last eight games. I'm going to look at the Chargers' schedule. I think there's some scoundrels. Do you believe the Chargers put out social media on their draft release mocking the Raiders in a clown outfit? When they got to the Raiders, they had the Raiders depicted as a clown? Really? I wonder what Dan Fouts thinks of that. Kellen Winslow Sr. I wonder what the legendary Chargers think about that. Charlie Joyner about the new management there depicting the Raiders as clowns. Oh, I've been going to war with the Charger fans lately, man. And they've been all over me. They're emboldened now with Harbaugh. You know the Chargers went from 36 fans to 391 with Harbaugh? They now have 391 fans in L.A. That's a big number when you think they had 30 fans and now they have over 300. I hope I get those numbers on YouTube. Hour two coming up next.